Blog Talk Radio.
Matrix, County 23, how do you be corrected as driver? You have a fire in a one-story ordinary. Looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. We're getting to traffic control. Squad 5, squad 5. England to 273, 273. England Battalion, 18, 18 Battalion. With a 273, 273.
Well, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is John Murphy. I'm a retired deputy fire chief and attorney at law, who will be your host and apparently your only presenter tonight. My other cohorts, Kurt Verone, Chip Comstock, Brad Pinsky, are all busy doing other legal things around the country, and we miss them on the show, but we have an exciting show tonight. And we're going to be talking about a few things affecting the fire service immediately. And in the long term, of course. I'd like to, we do have a sponsor. I think we have a sponsor. We had a sponsor, Honeywell DuPont FDIC scholarship program. I think that may be over. The scholarship petitions have been already in, but you may want to check on the Fire Engineering FDIC website to see if there's still space available for interested fire departments to nominate one of their own to become part of our exciting FDIC event this year in Indianapolis in April. 35,000 firefighters hanging out in Indianapolis for a week. You know, what could go wrong? And I think what could go wrong is that you actually learn something. And these hands-on training classes or these lectures that are presented by the best and the brightest in the fire service, and certainly we as attorneys will be making presentations at this conference as well on legal issues affecting the fire service, and each of us have our own particular ilk as to our subject matter expertise, and certainly you would want to attend our classes as well. A bit of sad news. My fire chief, Ron Hayworth from Issaquah, Washington, who was the original fire chief for King County Fire District 10 out here, and which became Eastside Fire and Rescue, passed away a couple weeks ago from failing health. Ron was instrumental in developing a lot of the innovative fire service programs here in Washington State, was a fire chief in a number of fire departments before he joined his last fire department, King County Fire District 10, and he was the guy that actually hired me up here to help put together a program to convert mostly from volunteer to career, and that segued into a consolidated fire department of five jurisdictions, cover about 210 square miles of East King County, and we miss you, Ron. We had a memorial service for him yesterday. And he is a sort of a pioneer in what goes on in our service. The other is I'd like to thank very much those who are on the FEMA teams and who are deployed and going to be deployed or who just returned from deployment. And it's I think it's important to recognize the fact that, you know, it's a sacrifice to you and your families that you're going you know, sailing in harm's way, essentially, and that the issue that that you face, the hardships that you see, certainly is traumatic to you and for your family. And so safe returns to all of you guys. I'm just going to bring Kurt Verone on here real quick. And here we go. Stand by for a second. Hey, Kurt Verone.
I should be here. Can you hear me?
You are there. I hear you.
Outstanding. I lost the call-in number, so I was a little bit late in getting here, but so I don't know what you folks were talking about.
Well, you folks is only me. Chip
what?
Has a prior commitment, and Brad was supposed to be on, and I don't know where he is, but he may pop up here pretty quick. So I was just kind of giving some opening comments about, you know, thanking the USAR FEMA teams who are on deployment, and pray for their safety, and glad that they're home and did a outstanding job as they usually do. We lost our fire chief here in Fire District 10 a couple of weeks ago from failing health, and so talked a little bit about the contributions that he made and ensuring the success of a consolidated fire jurisdiction. And then I was going to go over some of the statistics because I think a couple of things. This is what I'm thinking. I was going to do a little thing on diversity in the fire service. I was going to do just a sniglet of First Amendment and the issues of kneeling during the national anthem, which has apparently created a major hubbub between the president and the NFL and other sports teams. And hopefully you'll be able to weigh in on that. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about diversity because I think a lot of this litigation that we see in the fire service is because we don't understand or recognize the diverse nature of our business. And, that's kind of what I was thinking.
That sounds good.
All right. So a couple things. One, first of all, every time we're on the show and you're not here, Kurt, we always give you kudos for your website. And when I just taught a class last week in Woodinville, Washington on high-risk legal issues for emerging fire officers. And I refer to the sort of the research that you do on cases around the country that affect the fire service. And so hopefully some of our students actually looked up your website and kind of saw how the fire service is perceived in the public, how the litigation patterns occur, and what we actually get sued over is not so much the, burning the house down or, delayed response or, things that we would think that, may cause us to get sued, but it's all the internal stuff. And that's what I tell my class, and that's what your statistics are demonstrating, that subordinates essentially are the primary cause of litigation in the fire service, that we discriminate against one another, we harass one another, we do sort of outrageous acts that kind of make us as attorneys roll our eyeballs, saying, what the heck are you thinking about how we're conducting ourselves, between each other. And then the outcomes of litigation is very onerous in the community. As far as payouts go, as it polarizes the organization, a lot of people who are harassed leave, especially women and people of color have a tendency to leave the service because the workplace is essentially untenable. Which is an opening for you to say, yes, John, you're absolutely correct, and my statistics prove this.
Well,
they
absolutely do. Both my statistics prove it, and my anecdotal experience proves it. And I don't know what's going on with the human race these days. We have people on all sides of issues that have totally villainized the people on the other side. There is no gray areas. There is no common ground. You're on one side or the other, and the other is a total, villain, and we're totally good. And I think that is it's playing itself out across a lot of different levels in our society, including fire stations, where we're seeing self-righteous behavior, whether it's in Facebook posts or things that are said in fire stations or conversations that happen in fire stations that make people on the other side of an issue resent. And I was teaching a class the other day, and I had an officer make a comment that was just totally over the line, And he should have realized it, but I think that he was in this self-righteous mindset that I'm totally right, the other side is totally right. I don't want to try to give away all the details of it, but when you get in that mindset, that should be a warning to you, because no one is totally right and no one is totally wrong. It's just, the world just doesn't operate like that. We delude ourselves to believing that we're totally right and the other side has no redeeming qualities. But this officer made that statement, and it caused another member to get up and leave the room immediately. And then the officer had a very smug look on his face, like, yuck, 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 I guess I told him. And the other side was equally upset, and it confirmed that other firefighter's narrative about this officer. We're living in very, very difficult times, and what's happening in society plays over, into the firehouse. And, you mentioned the NFL and what's going on in the NFL. And I love to watch football and all sports just because it takes you away from the mind games that we often see in television and movies where there's all sorts of subtleties that are, you can tell people's political persuasions by what's in the films. But now it's in sports as well. And it's not going to be long before, if it hasn't already, and I have gotten a couple of calls this week where it has already started, where we're having firefighters who are going to do the same thing for the national anthem while they're in uniform. They don't want to wear the American flag patch on their uniform. And how do we handle that? This is wonderful. This is fantastic for attorneys. I mean, this, we just, eat this stuff up, but it's not good for the fire service.
No, it isn't. So let's talk about that. I think that's a great topic to kind of cut our teeth on today, because I know that issue is very polarizing. We have our president is tweeting pretty, nasty comments to NFL owners and the players. And
well, you're letting your subtle bias slip in there, Mr. Murphy. We know you're a Democratic counsel. You're a Democratic a candidate for counsel, and so.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the free pitch on that. I appreciate it. And if people want to donate to my campaign, they're more than welcome to do that. But we're not selling campaigns. But I think that, what we've done is exactly what you're talking about, Kurt, is that we've essentially had an incredibly polarizing event occurring because of, Black Lives Matter is part of that. The stuff that's going on with this, what I like Dave Statter says, the career assisted social media suicide with Facebook postings, mm-hmm. where people will put stuff on there that, you wouldn't ordinarily say to somebody's face, but due to the anonymity of social media, you can say pretty much what you want, and then the firefighters get caught. And I think one of the things you mentioned was that, do the players, do people in the private sector, and I would classify NFL football players as being in the private sector, can the employer dictate or guide their First Amendment behavior as opposed
and
to
absolutely,
public
of course
sector
they
employees?
Can. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I think it's a little bit of a soft toss question, but of course, because the First Amendment applies to government. Government cannot restrict people's First Amendment rights, their rights to free speech. The NFL is not part of government. So, now, if they were public employees, then the First Amendment would apply. But they're not public employees. And while you are wearing an NFL uniform, certainly the government, certainly the NFL or the individual team or an individual coach can do whatever they want regarding how you're going to conduct yourself while you're working for that particular team. If you work for Coca-Cola, you don't have a right to say Pepsi's better than Coca-Cola. It's just
right.
That's not what the First Amendment was intended for. The First Amendment was intended to prevent government from restricting people's speech, not private industry from restricting their employees' speech.
So now you get into
a second issue here is, should the NFL do something? That's a totally different issue from whether or not the First Amendment applies to that kind of speech.
Right. So, let me ask you this: you're what from your perspective, You don't have to answer the question, but from your perspective, what is the kneeling at the national anthem all about? Because people have probably 20 different reasons why they think, you know, there's this disrespect to the American flag, this disrespect of the songs, you know, that are being sung. It's disrespect for, you know, people of color. It's there's the whole range of reasons why people sort of come to the conclusion is that the reason that they're kneeling is because they're disrespecting the American flag. Well, that doesn't have anything to do with that. That's
I don't think that's the intent of the people. Yeah, I don't think that's the intent of who's kneeling. You know, but I think that you'd have to ask each individual about why they're doing what they're doing, and not ask me why they're doing what they're doing. But I think that in the country in general, we've got this polarization where one side has villainized the other side, and the other side sees themselves as totally virtuous. And so when you get in that mindset, you don't mind offending the other side. You don't mind poking the other side in the eye. And that we've got an awful lot of that going on. We've got, you know, people poking each other in the eye and then feeling good about having done it. And then the same people can't understand why the people on the other side don't respect their views. So,
right. Well,
you know, it's almost like you can't make this stuff up. But you know, they want their views to be respected, but yet they want to be able to poke the other side in the eye. So we've got a lot of that going on, and it's creating really, I think, a toxic environment in society. Number one, and a toxic environment in many of our firehouses as well. It causes one side to be oblivious to the harm they're causing to the other side and the divisiveness, while they just point the finger at the other side and say, oh, no, they're really the bad guy. I'm really the good guy. And we've got both sides doing the same things, claiming that they're the good guy and the other guy's the bad guy.
Yeah,
how can that
claiming
be?
Claiming the high ground. Right, yeah. Can't
you
both
know?
Claim the high ground.
So
the,
you can't.
So the issue
you,
when
you
you're
know.
Saying that the firefighters are going to be kneeling in uniform, not wearing an American flag, what?
Mm-hmm.
So the employer can say, mm-hmm. I want you to stand for the national anthem. I want you to, your uniform
sector,
consists
a
of
a private sector employer can do that, no problem.
Right, but so let's take this. So I'm the fire chief. I've been to war. I'm a patriot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flying American
mm-hmm.
flags all over my pickup truck. My guys are
mm-hmm.
saying, "Hey, chief, we're going to be kneeling during the national anthem." And I go, "Like hell you are. You're standing tall with a patch, an American flag on your shoulder, and the department's badge on the other shoulder." Why can't I do that? Because of the government nexus, right? Can I control how my people act? Can I respond to that? And can I terminate? Can I discipline? Can I limit? I don't
know. These are the things that
are,
these things are going to have to be litigated because they're again based on the phone calls I've gotten over the last few days. These things are starting to happen in fire departments. So these things are going to be played out in terms of disciplinary proceedings and grievances, maybe, you know, people going to federal court and trying to get an injunction against disciplinary actions and all sorts of other things. So they're going to be playing out. My opinion, you know, I have a perspective on it, but the First Amendment allows public employees to, on a matter of public concern, express their opinion. It's got to be a matter of public concern, but I would think that this is a matter of public concern, okay? As a private citizen, they have to be expressing their opinion as a private citizen. They have a First Amendment right subject to this wonderful thing called the Pickering Balancing Test, which
mm-hmm.
makes it awfully difficult in advance to predict whether or not the firefighter is going to win or the fire department is going to win. And I'm probably confusing the issue for the folks who are not familiar with the Pickering balancing test, but that's okay. I don't think if I spent 2 hours, I could clarify it any better than I already have. It's a terrible test. It makes it very difficult for an attorney to predict whether or not a public employee is going to have protection. once you get to that stage. But again, the two predicates to the Pickering balancing test are, is the person speaking out of a public concern, and are they doing it as a private citizen? So one of the good things for the fire chiefs out there is that when a firefighter is in uniform, as a general rule, they're in uniform, they're not acting as a private citizen. That's right. A broad brush. So in that regard, yes, I think that a fire chief, if they have all their ducks in a row, they have good policies, they have things in their rules and regulations that require firefighters to stand at attention. Like I know the Providence Fire Department has it in their rules and regulations that you will stand at attention during the national anthem and give a salute. And, you know, there's specific things. If you have those kinds of rules and regulations, you can enforce those. And then, you know, there may be some counseling for people who refuse to comply and retraining or whatever. And then if they are insubordinate in terms of following the rules and regulations, then discipline may follow. Okay. That's while they're in uniform. Now, when they're off duty, what if they're off duty and in uniform? What do the rules say about being off duty and in uniform? And then what if you're totally off duty? Well, if they're totally off duty, you really, that's where the First Amendment is going to be at its maximum protection. And then it may not be possible for you to do anything when they're off duty and out of uniform. But one of the problems is going to be not every fire department has rules and regulations on this. So now you got a fire chief trying to enforce his version or her version of what they think people ought to be doing, but they've got no rules and regulations to support it. And I think that's where you're going to probably run into the first round of problems.
So when you talk about policy, and we always like to talk about policy, having good policy in play, so you can enforce a rule or regulation. There's the code of conduct and the code of ethics, which also gives the fire chief some leverage to regulate off-duty conduct as well. And so, you know, we've talked in our show about terminating people under the, you know, conduct on the becoming component of a violation, even though they're off-duty, even though they're not in uniform, bringing discredit to your organization.
Yeah, I don't see that flying for, let's say you have a hypothetical African-American firefighter who is off duty and maybe at a high school game or, you know, whatever it may be. But he's off duty, he's out of uniform, and he refuses to stand or he kneels during the national anthem or whatever it may be. I don't think a fire department is going to be in a position to discipline that firefighter for doing that. That is an expression of the First Amendment, and I don't see that as being a disciplinary matter, no matter what the rules say.
Right. But if he puts something on his Facebook, and we've seen examples of Facebook postings before that have gotten firefighters terminated, that he says, you know, I belong to so-and-so. He somehow identifies himself as a firefighter on his Facebook with a picture, or, you know, people in the community know him as a firefighter. He says, there's no way in hell I'm going to, you know, stand for the national anthem because I think this, you know, rampant discrimination is going on. My personal beliefs are affronted, blah, 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 blah. Then does the fire chief or the organization have some leverage to impose a disciplinary process?
Well, you have a question of fact there about whether or not he did it. He did it as a private citizen, or he did it as a member of the department. But I think unless I'm envisioning a Facebook post that is different than the Facebook post you're envisioning, I don't see how the department can discipline him for that. The firefighters who are getting themselves in trouble in social media over this are the ones that are threatening to either withhold services to people that are on the opposite side of the issue, people who are threatening violence to people who are on the other side of the issue, or people who are encouraging others to either engage in violence or withhold services from others. So if you engage in any of those types of behaviors, and those are the ones that we see that are leading to firefighters getting terminated. They're threatening to run people over. They're threatening to withhold services. They're saying people ought to be sniped or shot or whatever. Those are the types of statements which cause actual harm or disruption to the organization. And when you engage in that kind of behavior, you're probably going to risk losing any First Amendment protection that your sentiments might otherwise have. So if somebody wants to say, I've got a problem with the way African Americans have been treated historically in the United States, he's got a First Amendment right to say that, okay? And, you know, now if he says, I'm going to shoot police officers or people are to shoot police officers, that's crossing the line. And that, I think, historically, from what we've seen in a lot of the disciplinary cases, again, this is still relatively new. We don't have any U.S. Supreme Court cases on that particular thing, but we're starting to see some federal court cases on it. But when you threaten harm to someone, that's different. You've gone beyond just stating your views, and you potentially lose any First Amendment protection you might otherwise have.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Oh, it does to me. I think the audience does, too, because I think the issue is that, you know, I hate to see this sort of trickle-down protesting that goes on, you know, especially with our firefighters, because they have a certain set of beliefs. And I think that they have every right to have those beliefs. But, again, it's this, you know, how do we honor our uniform that we have, you know, have a sworn oath, essentially most firefighters who go in and have an oath of office that they fulfill. And so, you know, the reaction to somebody is, yes, I believe that you do have a First Amendment right to your viewpoints. Even I think the Supreme Court a number of years ago has given Americans a right to burn the American flag. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So that's an expression of your viewpoint. I've expressed my viewpoint. If I see somebody burning the American flag, then I have a different viewpoint about immediate suppression activities that may occur. Because that, in my belief system, my personal belief system is that's wrong. And so I'll do everything I possibly can to prevent that activity from happening. Yes, I'll probably be arrested. And yes, you know, we'll have a conversation about it. But I think that, and like you said earlier, I think people go out of their way to create a situation where they do poke other people in the eye because they get a reaction out of it. And so
They think they're right, John, and this is the problem. They believe that they are right, that their worldview is right, and that it justifies them doing this. It justifies them being disrespectful. Now, whether it's a white firefighter who's being disrespectful to African Americans or it's an African American firefighter who's being disrespectful to the flag, they believe that their worldview justifies them in being disrespectful to the other side. And that's where we're at right now, that both sides believe they're right. And, you know, I have a great deal of sympathy for folks on both sides. I was talking to an African American firefighter who works for an officer and several firefighters who throughout social media, the guys are nice to him in the station. There's no problems in the station, but he sees the hatred that they're posting on their personal Facebook page. And it makes him worried going to work with these people because he sees what they're like He sees where their minds are at based on what they're posting in Facebook, and he feels very uncomfortable when he goes to work. And I don't blame
him. Rightfully so. Right.
But if we sat down with that officer and the white officer and the white firefighters who were posting all of those things, they would feel that I have a First Amendment right to say that, and I'm right, and he's wrong, and we're right, and I disagree with Black Lives Matter, and therefore I'm justified in posting this. And what's missing is the understanding of both sides to have appreciation for the pain that you're causing people on the other side. And people think because I'm right, I'm justified in kneeling, no matter if I insult veterans, no matter if I insult other people. It doesn't matter because I'm right. And how do we break out of this?
Well, I think we're going to spend a lot of time trying to figure that out. one of the things I talk about in the class I did last week was about diversity and how diverse our population is, but how mm-hmm. not diverse our fire department is, because it's pretty mm-hmm. much, you know, guys that are Caucasian males. And statistically, you know, African Americans and Asians and women are, you know, disproportionately lower percentile of being firefighters than white males. So in our industry, we have this sort of predominancy of white male, you know, with a certain opinion about, you know, how life should be and how the fire service should be, and bringing my prejudices and biases into work, affecting a relatively minority component of our fire service. And so, you know, so the question is, this is probably more of a moral and ethical concept than a legal concept, how do we balance out, you know, and how do we train our firefighters to take a look at, you know, people as for what they are, what qualities, contribution they bring into the service, you know, what sort of contribution do they make to the community, without, you know, driving, you know, these firefighters out or causing litigation, you know, causing litigation in our fire service.
Well, and I think the question goes beyond the fire service, and it kind of goes back, I hate to sound like a broken record, but we've got an awful lot of people in society, engaging in self-righteous behavior that mm-hmm. villainizes people on the other side. And so I think it has to start with both sides acknowledging the humanity that's on the other side of the issue, and that things that bring us together, we've got to find a way to bring everyone together and not continue to divide. And even when people on one side try to reach across and try to, you know, bring people together, it's misinterpreted as, you know, you're trivializing your faults, or you're not really respecting our concerns, and it just gets spun.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I'm not sure we'll be able to fix this in the fire service until we start to make some progress in society in general. Maybe
in
I'm
society,
wrong. Maybe,
right.
maybe it is possible, but it's a very uncomfortable situation. You know, I came from a family where my parents were divorced, and so I'm used to being in the middle of those kinds of tug of wars, and a very, very uncomfortable situation. And you know, it's not unlike, I think, the situation that we find ourselves in now, where you're getting pulled by both sides, and neither side is really in a mood to really talk civilly to the other side.
Well, they say that, you know, and I did some research on this diversity issue for the class, and it said that by 2050, there would be no racial or mm-hmm. ethnic group that will make up as much as 50% of the U.S. population. So mm-hmm. the population is relatively diverse. It's just that, mm-hmm. you know, we have people in our fire service that are not, because of, you know, maybe because people – maybe don't want to come into service, like women or people of color or Asians. So we have a predominance of, you know, white Caucasians in there. Because of the, you know, this reputation in the community that the fire service is no place to work because of, you know, multiple internal litigations that have driven people away, have cost the fire department a lot of money. And, you know, it's just a not a good place to work. And that goes, I think, not only to people that we bring in, and we probably need to do a better job of screening them, but I think the leadership has a role in this. So, you know, the leadership needs to set the tone, the pace, the example of, you know, how to be good, I think, stewards of our cultural diversity in the fire department itself, and what goes on. You know, the problem is, and I think you said this earlier, you know, people are out and they form an opinion in their own, you know, society, you know, in their house or their neighborhood or their church or their whatever, and they bring those sort of prejudices into work, and it's not recognizing the people that actually are affected by, you know, your bias or your prejudice or your conduct or your writings or your Facebook postings. So it creates, you know, an unhealthy situation. And actually, for some people, it's not safe. You know, there's a safety nexus there. You know, is this white guy who's behind me, and I'm an African-American, you know, on a nozzle going into a house, is he going to just close the door, you know, or crimp off the hose or lower the – I mean, is he going to harm me in some form or fashion?
Well, and,
his,
you know, I think
you know,
a lot of white firefighters don't see that. Like, you, if you mention that to them, you try to connect what they're saying in social media to a concern about them doing things like that, they'll laugh at you and say, oh, no, I would never do something like that. And in their worldview, of course, they would never do something like that. But,
right.
you know, that may not be the way somebody else perceives it. And there may be legitimate concern over those types of things. And, again, I think there's an obliviousness to this among many people. On both sides, I don't mean to pick on whites, you know, it's on both sides of the issue. And
mm-hmm.
there's a lack of a sense that you have to try to find common ground, that the other side has no virtue whatsoever, and therefore there is no reason for us to try to find common ground. And that's a tragedy.
It is a tragedy. So the question that I would pose is there an obligation on the fire service to teach people, train people in diversity or communications or recognition of people's differences in, you know, your workforce is different?
Yeah,
and,
but I'm going to tell you, I don't know if it works, okay? But I know having somebody from Cubicle World come in and try to teach firefighters how to deal with diversity is not going to work. People from Cubicle World, it's absurd, you know? So we need people in the fire service doing this kind of training. And I don't mean to denigrate, you know, people in HR who are trying to help this problem, but there's a credibility issue in a reality check that they need when it comes to dealing with our culture. We have a very, very difficult culture for outsiders to understand and really to integrate with. So I think that the training, and I understand there are some folks out there offering this kind of training that are firefighters, and I really think that, you know, that offers a solution. You know, but I think the bigger solution, we need to find a way society-wise, you know, to sort of get over these issues.
Right. I agree. So, you know, the horrible example is, and, you know, we hate to say this, I'd love to show this section in one of my classes, but, you know, I'd probably never teach again ever, is the Rescue Me session on diversity training that they brought
in. I use that.
You know, obviously,
I use that in a lot of my training. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important to take a look at that very issue that you talked about, is that we probably got inoculated in a culture that it would be difficult to change, except by the fact that it may be a generational issue. So, you know, I took a class when I was teaching a class down in Louisiana, and one of the instructors talked about the millennial firefighters, the new generation of firefighters that are coming in, are probably the most racially diverse group of people that the fire service has seen in a number of years. And so, and we do have a lot of retirements. I was in Seattle the other day, and they have 250 firefighters that are going to retire in the next 3 years. So that's an entire generation of firefighters mm-hmm. that are going to be leaving and, you know, taking the good part, the bad part, the, you know, the sort of institutional knowledge that younger people won't have when they come in. But we may be seeing that sort of cultural change in an organization because, we're swapping out 30-year firefighters with young millennial firefighters that are way more diverse than ever that we've ever seen in society. Leadership is the other thing. You know, we're both chief officers. You know, we've seen, you know, witnessed a lot of behavior that we, you know, are objecting to. And I think maybe, you know, small examples of, you know, this is how you should treat people, this is how you should conduct yourself, is a mini lesson, I think, on an everyday basis that leadership has a tendency to be involved in. But you know, again, I think in your blog, we talked about that, you know, the fire chief had made a racially insensitive comment to one of the football coaches, one of the volunteer fire chiefs, mm-hmm. who's, you know, kind of self-resigned before he got fired. But, you know, yes, I made a mistake. Yes, I, you know, said a word that I shouldn't have said. Yes, I did all that other stuff, and I'm sorry for that. But it's like firing a gun, right? The bullet leaves the chamber. You can't bring it back. It's an irreversible action on a lot of people's part. So how do you deal with that? You know, how do you deal with the, you know, that sort of societal issue where somebody utters a word that's, you know, not acceptable in society? You know, do we terminate those people? Do we correct behavior for those people? Do we, you know, just turn our head and say, well, that's just, you know, John Murphy, he's kind of an ass, and, you know, he says those sorts of things. You just have to, you know, ignore his comments. I mean, how do we as leaders, as fire chiefs and that sort of stuff, how do we deal with that?
Well, again, if we get to the root cause of it, it's the lack of willingness of a person to consider the humanity of the person and the people on the other side. And we're seeing that problem play itself out over and over and over again. The lack of willingness, the belief that I am right, this is what I believe, and here's another example of how the other side is not doing things right. And it just fits the narrative, and then somebody goes spouting off on Facebook about something. And so how do you deal with it? I guess at least at this point, we've got to deal with each one as they arise. That chief, I guess, was
right.
Forced to resign. And you know, but it's sort of like it's like whack-a-mole, you know, and that's not how we're not
right.
going to solve this problem by playing whack-a-mole, you know.
Right. Well, but there's, like you said, and I agree with you, there's no universal application of the law that affects every single solitary event, because each one has to be analyzed individually based on intent and content and the context of the reference, the frame of reference, the location, the media, you know, was it verbalized or was it in print or social media? Everyone, like you said earlier, and I agree, that lawyer, this is the lawyer's heyday.
Oh, my God.
On these issues.
I couldn't possibly be any busier. It would not be. I'd have to clone myself if I was going to get any busier. It's just unbelievable. I got two phone calls just in the period of time that we've been talking. It's just I'm on overload. It's great for business. I wish it wasn't. I'm ready to retire.
Right. Right. Well, I don't think you'll ever retire, because people will keep calling you, even chasing you to the grave. But we'll make sure that there's a cell phone in there you can answer.
Thanks. Thank you. Long recharge cord.
No. No rest for the dead. All right. So I think we nailed it. You know, we're at our kind of our max time. And I think this is good stuff. Hopefully the people that listen to this take heed, because I think the issue that we're seeing needs to be further analyzed from different people's perspective, because there's many, many viewpoints. And I like what you're saying. You don't want to grab onto the narrative that fits you. You want to grab on the knowledge of the origin of the narrative, why people think that way. What's the real story behind why people are kneeling or sitting during the national anthem? Because there's a huge explanation behind it, which we talked about, but is beyond the comprehension of a lot of people, because they either are protesting, you know, the American flag, they're protesting the national anthem, they're standing up for the civil rights, they're standing up for, you know, these sort of affronts against, you know, minorities and people of color and the people that we talked about earlier in our show. But I think it's incumbent on, you know, our audience anyway, and firefighters in general, who is our audience, to understand what the issue is all about and not just start posting crap on your Facebook that's going to get you, you know, in a jam with your organization and necessitating a phone call to, you know, Kurt Verone for advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Verone, John, like we said before, there's a lack, like, you know, when it comes to this NFL kneeling, there's a lack of appreciation for the humanity that goes into the people who are kneeling. Okay, that there's no a lot of people that I know have no sense that they need to acknowledge the humanity and the concerns of the people who are kneeling. On the other side, there's a lack of concern and humanity for the people who are kneeling about the message that other people are receiving. You know, so it's both sides. It's not
right.
There is no one side that has virtue in this or all virtue. There's one side that is very offended by certain things, and the other side is just as offended by similar types of things. And it's just that neither side is willing to acknowledge the humanity of the other side, and we've got to find a way to bridge that.
Exactly.
Keep saying I'm right, right up until we have a civil war. And you know, I think that if you look through history, you know, no country went to war thinking they were wrong. Every war there's ever been, it's been fought by two sides that thought they were absolutely right. And we've got to find a way to bridge that.
Yep. Well, I think
the need is,
you're right.
The need is becoming urgent.
Yeah, very much so, because we're polarized, you know, more so than ever. So, well, that's all we've got, I think, tonight. Is there any final comments?
No,
you,
I've got to get working on my blog, so I'm going to hang up right now. How's that?
All right. Sounds good, Kurt. Thank you very much for joining.
Okay.
We appreciate
all right,
your
John.
Input. All right. Take care.
Take care.
Yep. So that wraps up our show for tonight. Very illuminating discussion about the issue of kneeling during the national anthem. Taking a look at why we're here. I think it's incumbent again on our firefighters to research and understand the issue, have a discussion with fellow firefighters that you may not agree with particularly. But we need to engage in more discourse. We need to engage in more critical thinking, and we just need to engage for the right reasons. So with that being said, I'm signing off, and have a safe rest of the week. And again, I appreciate those out on the USAR teams and traveling, all over our country and soon to be Puerto Rico, and some of you are down in Mexico. Thank you very much for your service. And thank you very much for your service to all our military. So with that, I'm signing off, and have a wonderful evening.